Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business, take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. shopify.com/theathletic.
This is the Civilized Barking Podcast with Zach Jackson.
All right, we see a few of you guys popping in. Thank you. This eventually is going to be Civilized Barking Podcast. This is our live room. Pre-draft. We tried to do this last Friday afternoon. If you were one that came in and asked questions, thank you. But I messed something up. And as I was telling Jason, instead of going detail by detail on the second try to trail my steps, I just got mad and I did the same thing again and we couldn't get live and all of that. So listen, if it was an urgent press conference, if this was an urgent draft for the Browns with all sorts of buzz and intrigue early, then we would be more on top of it, right? We'd be more in detail and we would have already done this. But it's still important, you know, and we'll see. I think the Cavs will be playing Friday night during the draft. So
maybe determined.
Right. But Jason, I just wanted to kind of catch up. You know, we last did this as we were leaving the owners' meetings, so going on 4 weeks ago. I think maybe just a little short of exactly 4 weeks ago. At the time, we had talked stadium. We had talked just kind of the busier than expected March that the Browns had. You know, anything come to your mind there? Because I don't even think you'd written your stadium column yet. I think you were on your way to doing it when we did it. So.
Yeah, obviously there's been a lot of news on the stadium. Some of it's swatted down, batted down. I think we're at the point right now where it's hard to decipher fact from fiction. I do believe that if they do stay at the current site, it is going to take a massive overhaul, as Jimmy and Dee both alluded to at the owners' meetings. I can think of a lot better uses for lakefront property than putting a stadium there that you use 10 times a year, but it doesn't sound like that's changing anytime soon. I just don't think that there's funding for it, really. You know, Mayor Bibb came out last week pretty strongly and said he's not using general funds for maintenance. He did say maintenance. He didn't say building or reconstructing. He did say maintenance. But it doesn't sound like there's and frankly, that's been sort of recent history, is if you want it, you go build it, is what a lot of cities have told these owners. And you know, we've talked about it before. Stan Kroenke footed the bill. He built the whole thing in L.A., spent $5 billion on that. Arthur Blank in Atlanta put up, I think it was about half or more for the dome in Atlanta. Minnesota was half or so by the ownership. And Zach, I did not get the impression at the owners' meetings that Jimmy had any motivation or any desire to put up that much when he was asked point blank about, what if the city comes back and says they want a retractable dome? He kind of laughed, was half joking, half not, said, well, how much money is the city putting up? So I don't think he really wants to go there in terms of spending. So it's the best you can do with what you have in terms of remodeling what they already have.
Yeah, I think, you know, what came across your Twitter screens and laptop screens and whatever was, you know, in the last 10 days or so was premature at best. What level of accuracy there was or will be to that, I don't know. I think some of it was flat out wrong. I think some of it was in the ballpark and just premature, like I said, I mean, as we mentioned last week, Jason, I think it finally feels like the Browns off season, right? We got Clark County or Harris County, Texas, police filings. We got all sorts of fake or half fake news flying across Twitter.
Yeah.
And not with the draft, they are back in the news. So I don't think you can decipher too much. My one takeaway from Andrew Berry's press conference was that, and this goes to Stefanski too, which we've talked about, I think both of them are aware. I think they've been nudged to actually answer questions and actually make themselves seem human in these environments. Do you agree with that?
It can only help them. Yes, I do agree with it. And I think it can only help them. I think everybody's probably feeling it a little bit. And this is typically what happens. Pre-firings is executives, coaches start looking for allies in the media. And I think that's what's happening here. I don't think it's a bad strategy. And I hope it doesn't come to that. You know, I hope the Browns get off to a good start and everyone keeps their jobs. But this obviously is a very, very, very big year. If this goes sideways again, this could get really ugly in terms of players wanting out, coaches thrown out, GMs thrown out. So there's a lot at stake and a lot riding on this season.
Yeah, I think now as you dive into the draft, I think there's some mystery among fans and really among us. How much influence does Paul DePodesta have? Does he run the team? Does Andrew Berry run the team? How much influence do the Haslams have? Jason, I think one thing you can, and we were both already there, but I think one thing you can fairly gather from the quarterback market is that the Deshaun contract was and is going to be an outlier. And so for a team that's so into numbers and so into market value and getting ahead and has retained so many of their own guys and done so at numbers that they feel like are friendly to the team now and in the future, to have that contract be done the way it did shows you that probably the GM didn't do that contract. Probably ownership did it, right? Because that would completely contradict everything that the GM and Paul DePodesta have done with the other contracts. So
That's probably a fair assumption.
And the other fair assumption is if this would go sideways or if this even goes partially sideways, let's say Watson plays well and let's say it is a much better season. It just doesn't go. We know who has the power, guys. And it's not the GM. It's not the chief strategy officer. It's not the head coach and play caller. It's the quarterback because he's here for a long time. So we will see. If you have questions, fire them in the chat. Like I said, there's not a lot of pressing Browns things. I just posted probably 2 hours ago, maybe not even that, my three-layer mock draft where I took Dane Brugler's expertise and his Browns predictions. I made my own Browns predictions as well as what I would do. I think it's probably the deepest draft thing we've gotten into in terms of, you know, what I think the fits are, what we're pretty convinced the Browns are looking for based on the last three drafts, you know, where they might go. I'm fully prepared to be surprised. I think there's probably one large surprise in that three-layer mock draft for you guys. Look, they're going to add defensive linemen. It was a huge miss last year. It's a group that was reconstructed right away in the first day of free agency. At least partially, but that's not done. It's the pass rushing piece, the guys on the edge, those are premium players that are hard to find. You can find them through different layers of the draft historically, you know, more than you can find offensive tackles, quarterbacks, some of the other corners, you know, some of the other premium positions. But the Browns need to keep stocking that room. And then we'll see, you know, are they willing to go bigger at defensive tackle, both in resources and in physical mass? You know, if it is a surprise, are they suddenly going to show us that they think the linebacker position is valuable? Would they go back to the well on corner? If the right receiver, the Mims kid from Oklahoma, is there at 74, would they take him? I think they would. So we'll see. So, like I said, there is some intrigue, but we know Barry's going to move around. We know there's a handful of specific needs. But, you know, I think this is a front office that treats the draft, especially one where they don't have a pick in the first two rounds and did so consciously, obviously. As its own entity, they want to add young players with certain traits and they want to see. And with Perry on Winfrey, Jason, there's no reason for him to be on the team. He's been an embarrassment. I think, you know, it is right to follow the protocol and find out what really happened, right? But I think they haven't done it yet as far as releasing him because I don't think they want further spotlight on their previous bad drafting as they're about to go do it again.
Yeah, he's certainly not here by September. I don't believe I'd be shocked if he's still on this team by final cuts. Maybe he doesn't even make it to camp. I agree with you. You got to go let the legal process play out. you can't do anything premature, but at the same time, I don't know that there's, you know, we knew he had maturity issues. We knew he had a lot of growing up to do, and he couldn't make it through one off season without winding up in the headlines again. And that just does not bode well for me. But one thing I wanted to ask you, they got 8 picks now. I don't think they're drafting 8 players. So look into your crystal ball. I've not had a chance to read your story that you posted today. I just literally walked in the door and hit go on this. I've been out all day. But how many players do you think ultimately they draft this weekend, and what round is their first pick in?
You know, I'm not going to rule out 8. I wouldn't draft 8 because there's not room for them. They will draft in the middle of the third round. Whether or not that's 74 or not, I don't know. I think for the cost of a 5, they would go up for the right pass rusher if they feel like they're going to need to. I think ideally at 74, 98, or 111, they want to go down. They want to add those picks for the future to have that flexibility, which they've done. Again, like I said, I think they view this as its own entity, and they have their way of doing it. And he's made multiple trades in each of the first three drafts. So one of them's already been made because the Elijah Moore trade got him here to 74, right? But, you know, if they do draft 8 guys, then it is double up at wide receiver and or defensive end. Then it is look at a quarterback that maybe you can develop and trade in a year or two, or kind of fits the system you want to come in. I mean, we know, and this doesn't just go for the Browns. This goes for any team. If you have to play your backup more than a couple of games, you're screwed. But and this is what part of the reason Josh Dobbs is back. I think a big part of it is chemistry reasons and likability reasons. You know, you need a guy that can be competent, that can run a similar offense, that has a similar skill set, so you can at least stay afloat if a guy gets a concussion, a high ankle sprain, something that's a couple of games, right? Any team, 9 out of 10 teams that play a season, half a season without their quarterback don't make the playoffs. Right, I know that the Niners are kind of an outlier.
They're the anomaly on that, yeah.
And it is the most important position in sports, which is why the Browns are where they are, right? Because they didn't have one for 40 years, and then they made that trade 13 months ago. So, you know, there is something to be said for continuing to stab at a lot of players and hope that they hit. Now, we can be critical and realistic about the hit rate here, but I think going back to Sashi Brown's drafts, Dee Podesta's first drafts, they just took volumes of guys, and they drafted terribly for the most part. But they took a lot of guys, and they said, we'll put them in the pipeline. Frankly, that pipeline's not what it should be, what they want it to be, especially based on the way they have drafted, focusing on traits and youth and things like that. But, you know, if you make 8 picks or even 9 picks, we'll see. And, you know, I think last year could still be a good draft. I think the world of Martin Emerson, I think Jerome Ford has a chance to be a player for this team. I think Cade York is going to be the kicker and be a good one for a long time. And, you know, frankly, that would constitute a decent draft. Alex Wright can be a backup in that mold, right? So we'll see. We'll see. Like I said, it's just – you're just not going to get a lot of sizzle externally anytime you don't pick till 74.
Right.
Anytime you look and say, hey, you know, most of these position groups for September are set. But – you know, things can change quickly, and we'll see. But yeah, pretty clear edge rush and just adding players to the pipeline, because with a new coordinator and still, I think, some snaps to be won at some other positions, you know, it wouldn't be a surprise to see 3 or 4 rookies help this team. It just feels like more than 6 of them are not going to make it on August 30th.
I tend to agree with that. That's why I don't think they're making 8 picks. And, you know, you point to the draft last year and it could end up being a good draft. I do believe we all get better the longer we do things, right? Like, I'm a better writer, hopefully, than I was 20 years ago. You're a better reporter and writer than you were when you first started. Andrew Berry, I think it's fair to believe, has gotten better and maybe learned from some misses early on. I mean, he's been, what, 4 drafts now?
This is 4 drafts. This is 4, yeah.
So you'd think the longer that you do something, the more you tweak your system and you learn what works, what doesn't, things that you thought were true that were true and lean into those, and things that you thought were true that weren't true that you know not to look at the next time around. So, you know, I do have hope and optimism that the more that these guys do this, the better they get at it. But I'm just wondering, do you think going into the second round is unrealistic? What would a trade, would it take both 3s? What would a trade into the second round look like in terms of what you have to give up?
Yeah, it would take a lot. Now, really, the end of round 2 is only 11 spots. But, you know, in the realm of how teams build their draft boards, that's generally that, right? I remember 1 year, about 5 or 6 years ago, the Eagles and Ravens made a trade like the week of the draft. And the trade involved in like pick number 88. And I just thought, well, the Ravens think there's 88 good players in this draft.
Yeah.
You know, I think the gist of reading and talking to people that I've been able to is this is not like a top sizzle bunch of blue chips draft, but it is a strong draft for depth, for teams that want corners, they want pass rushers that are sitting with a lot of picks in the second, third, and fourth round. So, you know, because the Browns made the Elijah Moore trade, I have a hard time believing there is one player that they would need to go up 13, 15, 18 spots for. But, you know, when I look at Zach Harrison and Isaiah McGuire as the most likely targets at defensive end, you know, going up five spots if they think they need to is not out of the question. It really isn't. So, and then, like I said, I mean, when you're at 98, you can go either way. So, we'll see. We'll see on that. I like your point about Barry in the past. I think some smart people have kind of made that point of like, look, he's young. He's made some mistakes. And so as we judge the Browns, it's fair to say that, okay, are they going to get better? Should you know more? Should there be better systems of everything, both of your actual draft systems, which we know the Browns build out years in advance with all these data employees that they have, and in just in your communication with your coaches, with your head scouts, which how you want to go. I think it goes back, Jason, to the conversation you and I had with an offensive player at the end of the year when the shit was hitting the fan on the defensive side. And he was kind of like, well, you know, we got to get better. And we obviously are going to be a different offense with having Deshaun in the full time. But we can do what the defensive guys are doing, which is bitch and complain and point fingers. Or we can say we got to get back in the spring and work our ass off and go forward. And I think that's how you look at it. Like, this could be a good Browns team. I think we all believe that. Yeah. And obviously, Deshaun Watson and Jim Schwartz are at the front of that list, right? This could also be a bad Browns team that makes you feel like it's the same bad organization that's well behind the best organizations. And if it isn't a good season, then we all wonder what's going to happen in January.
Yep.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Oh, I got one more for you on moving around the board that I just thought of. Obviously, we've talked about the importance of this year, and they have to be all in on this year, and they have to get this right, and they have to win, da 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 da. They don't have a fourth next year. Is that of any concern? I think, right, they traded the fourth in the Deshaun deal. I think it's the only round where they got a hole for next year. What do you think the odds are that they move any of these picks? Because it feels like a surplus of picks to me. Do they move a four this year for a four next year?
In two of his three drafts, he's traded involving fourth-round picks. Kwesi went to the Vikings and made a trade in his own division in the fourth round. That tells me the way they model things tells you that's where trade action happens. So, yes. I just scanned these, and I see the question from Christoph, your first impression of Jim Schwartz. You know, it's strong, Christoph, and I think I've said, you know, most encouraging is this is not a guy who needed this job. This is a guy who was willing to do this, saw the right players, believed in this organization, came back. But honestly, our first impressions are not beyond that. We have not had any contact with him. We have not been in the building for that. And the offseason program started last week, but it's just conditioning. There is no on-field work until, I believe, a week from today, maybe even two. And there are no actual practices, the OTA practices, until the back part of May. So it is a layered program. And last week, meant the guys could come back in the building and do football activities and have team meetings and talk with their coaches. But as far as like what Jim Schwartz is doing and actually taking it to the field, that's still weeks away. And then any results are a week away. If you know me, I'm not ever going to get too excited about what goes on in the offseason stuff, but it is important. And I think behind Deshaun Watson, obviously playing to, or at least in the zip code of his pay grade, the Browns knew last September they should have fired Joe Woods, and the season was a mess, and they got off the rails real quickly. And they're committed to these players, a bunch of them, right? They've gotten rid of the ones they weren't committed to. So there's always been a huge bet on Jim Schwartz coming in and cleaning up fundamentals and making a big difference in terms of maximizing the talent on hand, cleaning up some of the bullshit on and off the field, because we know a lot of it funnels through the defensive side. And then saying, okay, we're a much better defense. They're not, you know, being a top three defense is not going to win them the Super Bowl, right? But being a top 12 defense that doesn't melt down and let receivers run uncovered is a big key to getting to the playoffs. So we will see.
I want to skip down to, I saw a question from Samantha. Outside of running back, is there a position AB can draft to replace a core piece in a few years because of money, D-line, corner, or guard? I think they're in pretty good shape in terms of corner. Guard, we've talked before, Betonio and Wyatt, you can't keep paying guards $30, $35 million when you're paying your quarterback as much as they are. I don't know that there is an adequate replacement. You know, I was told Nick Harris is too small to play guard. He played some guard in college, but he's really more of a center. So I don't know that they really have a guard in waiting there. But I'll go back to the start of that question. I don't pay a ton of attention to mock drafts. I just don't care. I think most of them are a waste of time. But I was talking to somebody the other day who said the Browns keep getting mocked a running back in the third round, and that struck me as odd. Am I correct? Like, would they really?
I just did it.
You just did it. Okay, now explain that. Why a running back in the third round?
Nick Chubb next year is due $16 million cap number or $4 million dead to not be on the team. So you're either redoing Nick Chubb or you're letting him go after this year.
Wow.
Teller and Betonio are both at $20 million-ish for next year. Amari's at $23 million to play for you or $11 million to not play for you. Njoku's at $18 million. Conklin's at $12 million. And Wills is about to get locked in at $14.7 million, which you could locked in pencil because it could be negotiated into a long-term deal. So who on this offense isn't coming back? We don't know that answer.
No,
we don't know that answer, but
I could say confidently, you know, they're not all coming back.
Correct. So you've got some serious cap gymnastics and at least one notable deletion. So we'll see. I mean, David Njoku, $18 million. I know you guys love him because he warms up with no shirt on.
Hey, I don't know if we've discussed this. I mentioned this on other platforms, but I don't know what you and I talk about this. And it struck me in terms of the Greg Newsom. I don't care if Greg Newsom asked for a trade or not. I don't care. I tend to believe he probably did. But it doesn't matter because they're not going to trade him anyway. There's no motivation for them to do
with
it.
You. Yeah.
But is there any – what do you think – is there any way that they go to him? Because we all know after they signed Austin Hooper, they draft Harrison Bryant, Njoku wanted out, and they got him to buy back in. And I don't know this. I'm just spitballing. Do they go to him at any point and say, listen – get back in the boat, help us out, do what you do, and we're going to make you whole when the time is right. And could they do the same? Because obviously Greg is concerned about being paid like a slot corner instead of an outside guy. Could they go to Greg and say the same thing of, listen, we did it with David, we'll do it with you. Get back in the boat, play the way that we know you're capable of doing, perform in the role that is asked of you because you're under contract and you have no choice. And when it's time, we're going to make you whole, and we don't necessarily have to pay you like slot corners typically get paid. Or am I just totally crazy on that?
No, I think you're absolutely in the ballpark of what happened. Don't know the details on that conversation. As we both said, you don't employ Drew Rosenhaus to get the Mr. Hero endorsement or the Giant Eagle endorsement, right? But you're right, it doesn't matter. They're not trading him. They just drafted him. He's 22 years old. And his cap number the next 2 years is only $4 million. In total, barely eight for 2 years, right? I think it's three something this year and four something next year. He's not even eligible for an extension. So, yes, I don't think that they, when they drafted him last year, I don't think they saw Martin Emerson passing him.
Totally agree.
Maybe Martin Emerson didn't pass. I think they eventually found out Martin Emerson was more ready to play than they thought. They did consciously, because they moved on from Troy Hill, they did consciously make Greg the slot corner. He didn't play all slot, but he was the guy. They don't have another guy. AJ Green is a special teams player. All right, they're trying to develop this Thomas Graham. We'll see if that happens. But Greg is still the slot corner. So, those are the conversations you need to have. I think this is a part of this new era of Browns football where guys are actually getting paid. So, I mean, Jason, as I've said, you've been in locker rooms, different sports for a long, long time. It didn't matter whether it was the Cavs in 2016 or Ohio State in 2001. Everybody else knew everybody else in the locker room's salary, right?
Yep.
So I think these are the things you go with. And I think, yeah, I think they might have said, look, we'll get you taken care of. Or maybe a year from now they do trade Greg Newsom. Frankly, I think they wanted to trade Greg Newsom or Wyatt Teller this year. But neither one of them had the kind of season to make the value even close to what it was. So those guys are more valuable to the Browns than they are to any other team.
Yeah.
Yeah. Corner is the one area where they have the most depth. I don't think that rules out drafting more corners in the draft, especially because you don't have a true slot corner, especially because you don't know if Greg's going to request a trade.
Right.
Greg has missed a handful of games each year. So is Denzel. Like, this is what happens. Corners are the smallest guys on the field, and they are involved in high-speed collisions 50 times a game. Right. They are running all-out sprints on 60 of the 80 snaps in a game. Like, you know, you need corners to play against Jamar Chase. Right, you need corners to play against George Pickens, who you wouldn't draft last year for character reasons when he took on Deshaun Watson. Like, so we'll see. I think some of it. I think the Browns and Greg consciously chose to address it, whether that was 100% truthful or not. But I think that came after the idea of, yes, this will get right, and we'll see. To go back to Perrion, not that it's 1 ounce the same, but. There is a correlation. There is a sliding scale between how much unnecessary drama you have in a season and what kind of season you have.
Absolutely.
Right. And the Browns didn't field an onside kick last year, and Miles wrecked his car, and, you know, all sort. Anthony Walker turned out to be apparently the most valuable linebacker in the history of modern football. You know, like, all of these things happen, and the Browns didn't really respond to any of them. So let's get to the Cavs here for a couple minutes. Thank you guys for logging in. It's not one thing, Jason. They've flat out gotten their ass kicked. But if you got to pick one that's most alarming or most the cause for said ass kickings, what do you think it is?
I mean, a lot of people obviously are going to go to the rebounding and the fact that Jared Allen keeps getting pushed around. And that's all true and fair. And I have no complaint on that, or I have no disagreement on that. But to me, We knew from October, November, this team was going to go where the guards take them. So I put it on Donovan and Darius. They have to play better. Donovan was terrible in New York. Darius has been terrible. Darius hasn't been terrible, but he's been below par outside of one game in the first 5 minutes of the third quarter, really the entire third quarter yesterday. So I put this on them. And there's, you know, for a lot of people that are screaming about JB and want JB fired and all that, and I get it. And I don't agree with everything he's done. I don't understand why he keeps going back to Ricky Rubio. But the fact is, they've got like seven rotational players, and that's it. And that's counting Danny Green as a rotational player who can barely get up and down the floor. There's just no depth to this team. There's no shooting on this team at all. And in the NBA, you have to have shooting. You've got to have shooting if you're going to go anywhere in the playoffs. And, you know, I'll go back to the 2016 team that won the championship. And obviously they had LeBron and obviously they had Kyrie and they drove everything. But you had two guys who could get to the basket. And what did? They spread the floor around them with guys like Kevin Love and Channing Frye and J.R. Smith and Kyle Korver. And just shooter, shooter, shooters. Spread the floor with shooters. It opens everything up. And right now the Cavs don't have an open floor because they're playing two guys, Evan Mobley and Jared Allen, who are not three-point shooters. They want Evan Mobley to be one, but he's not yet anyway. And then when you put Okoro out there, now you have three defenders in the paint because nobody's scared of him shooting the corner three. So it's there's a lot of this postseason obviously has exposed a lot of issues. We knew that they didn't have a lot of depth. We knew that already. We knew they didn't have size. I wrote that 2 weeks left in the season. Guys, they don't have any bigs to play off the bench. Dean Wade has been a massive disappointment since they got rid of Kevin Love. He's not been able – he can't put him on the floor. Mm-hmm. He's supposed to be a big with size who can rebound and make threes, and they can't even get him on the floor right now. So they have no assets to fix this. That's the most troubling thing. They pushed all in on Donovan, and like Markkanen, Abaji, all the number ones that they traded, all of it went to Utah. So for people screaming, why didn't they make a move at the deadline? Well, it's because they had nothing to trade. Kevin Love was not a tradable piece with the contract that he had. He's much more appealing on the buyout market than he is as a trade piece at $30 million salary. Caris LeVert has no trade value when he's in the last year of his deal. They had literally zero first-round picks to trade. They could not trade a first. People want to scream, why didn't they go get Josh Hart? Well, the Knicks gave up a protected first-round pick for him. The Cavs didn't have that. So I don't know where they turn to fix this roster in the future with still no real tradable assets unless you're digging into your core, and they very much consider Jared Allen to be part of their core going forward. So it's a tough ask, but they've got to find more shooting. And they obviously have to find more depth on this bench.
Yeah, I mean, I know why they couldn't, but at this point, it feels like this series was decided at the deadline.
Well, yeah, I mean, Josh Hart goes to the Knicks at the deadline, and obviously he's played a huge role for them. And the Knicks just have more – I mean, the Knicks have nine rotational pieces that they can just keep running out at you.
No doubt.
And the Cavs – I mean, Jenny Osmond should be a ninth man in a rotation. Isaac Okoro should be an eighth or a ninth man in rotation. And you're relying on these guys to play heavy minutes. And I've been advocating for Danny Green to play, knowing realistically on the Knicks, Danny Green is the 10th player, 11th player in the rotation. But the Cavs, if it's me, I'm starting him at the three. And I know it sounds crazy, but I like Caris in the reserve role and the shooting that he provides because they don't have any depth and they don't have any shooting coming off the bench if you start him. And at least Danny isn't overwhelmed by the moment and can make an open three. He just can't get up and down the floor.
No, I agree. You know, overwhelmed is what it seems like on the sideline.
Yeah, playing scared.
Yeah. And then, you know, like Mitchell Robinson was a non-factor for two games, and all of a sudden he's all over the place. Like, it just feels like the energy is all on the other team's sideline. It just does.
Yeah. Yeah, it's – I didn't like the matchup in the first place. Ken made fun of me for it. Ken Carman made fun of me because I wasn't going to pick the series, but I did not like this matchup. I didn't like how physical the Knicks were up front, and some of that has borne out. Julius Randle's not had a good series, but boy, have they pushed around Mobley and Allen inside. Yeah. And it's they're in a tough spot right now. Hopefully they win Wednesday and get the series back to New York on Friday, but I don't see it going beyond that.
Well, I will say this, and this sounds – absurd, I know, but if they win, right, the home team is not supposed to be down 3-1,
right?
But if they win Wednesday, the pressure does all go on the Knicks
to close out at home. Sure.
Yes, because you don't want that looming. So we'll see. Back to the Browns for a minute again, guys. Just earlier this afternoon, my three-layer mock draft went. We'll see if I get one right. I'm a genius, frankly. A lot of crapshoot, but I feel like there was some depth and reasoning both on why Dane Brugler, who really knows the stuff inside and out, by why he made the selections he made and why I agreed or disagreed with them. And, you know, we're going to be back in full Browns coverage mode. We got a couple other, you know, standard pre-draft things dropping on the site this week. And then when they do start on Friday night, we'll have every pick covered and in the full there. So if you got Asking Jackson questions, tweet them to me. Probably we'll do another podcast because gosh, everybody else in the league is gearing their pre-draft coverage till Thursday. We just had a big meeting this morning. Mine doesn't start till Friday at 9. So maybe do another podcast. We'll get to them. Glad to do it. We appreciate you guys reading and listening and hopping in here. So thanks for listening. And, you know, hopefully on Wednesday night, you get a better basketball product to watch. And then on Friday, hopefully you got to follow the Browns while you're following the Cavs. So thanks, everybody. And talk to you soon.